This is the Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, the King is in the house. Wayne Carey joins us to talk North Melbourne, the AFL resuming after the coronavirus, fingers crossed, the 20 best players he's seen, and just as importantly, the ones who missed out. All that and much more.
To the wing position on the member stand side. Oh, Jesselenko, you're guilty.
The Tigers are going to win the premiership in 2007. The Tigers have got home for the first time in 37 years.
Cox throws it onto the left. One last roll of the dice for the Eagles.
Read it best, wrong side for him, hooks a ball, what a bomb, sensational!
Well, hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson, and with us this week is Caroline Wilson, Jake Knoll, and the man of the moment, Wayne Carey, delivering us his top 20 players of all time. But before we get into all of that, welcome to all of you, first of all.
Hello.
Michael.
All in quarantine, all in the bunkers. But quarantine and the coronavirus is still the issue of the only sport we've got going on at the moment. And Jake, there's been a little bit of movement in the last day or so with some of the clubs.
Yes, and Caro obviously wrote about this at length for Saturday's paper. There's clubs that have signed up or not signed up to an AFL major loan of about $600 million from the two banks, the ANZ and the NAB. I believe Adelaide, who I just spoke to this morning, and they're also going it alone and getting their own loan, whereas other clubs obviously not in that position. And there's terms that go with going with the AFL.
Yeah, I think originally the misgivings were largely felt by the wealthier clubs who were very unhappy at signing up to a receivership model. Jake, and you know, early last week that was the situation. West Coast and Richmond, for example, and Hawthorn, and Jeff Kennett was pretty vocal about this as part of the coronavirus cabinet that he's on. Why should we have to share all of our secret business with the AFL every week and report in every week when we're running a good business and we don't need to borrow any money? So they achieved an exemption clause. Should they change their mind and come back and want to borrow money, they will be charged, I'm told, an extra 5% on any borrowings for not signing up, so there will be a penalty. But what it's done as the week drew on was expose the real gap, the real difference between the haves and the have-nots. And as Andrew Bassett said, he and his club with his $10 to $12 million debt, how will we ever achieve success and how will we ever catch up? So I think it's a great concern.
Well, it's also, Wayne, bring you into this. You wrote about North Melbourne and your personal concern, because North's debt is actually about $650,000, I think, compared to St Kilda, which is $13 million. And there's obviously been questions asked about the new clubs, which I don't think will ever. I think they'll be here forever and a day, or for a long time. Just how do you feel about it as a North man, that it seems like North are in the gun?
Oh, look, I think the one thing that I've learned over the years is North Melbourne's always in the gun. They've always been in the gun, and there are other clubs in a similar position, and many of those clubs are obviously from Melbourne. And I talk of the Bulldogs and probably St Kilda to some degree in the same boat. What I would like to ask you guys is what sort of an advantage is it to the clubs that go it alone? I mean, clearly I know that is it just purely that they're not under all of the AFL's watchdog, so to speak? Is that the only advantage to not going with the AFL?
That's the main advantage. I mean, it's a chore, Wayne, having to pass every single innovation you want to achieve in your footy department past head office, because in the end, what they will become, these clubs, and I include North Melbourne in that, and And the reason it is always North, I think, is because although they have passionate and wonderful supporters, they just don't turn up or sign up in memberships in the numbers of the other clubs. But getting back to the question, they won't be able to do anything without the AFL's approval. They won't be able to, for example, if there is a situation with extra rookies on your list, if there's a situation with a VFL team, if there's a situation with an academy. I mean, sharing your, having to go and show up your books every single week. I mean, that's a pretty arduous task, and it's disadvantageous.
In terms of having the soft cap, which obviously came into the game, and therefore, you know, if you went outside that soft cap, you couldn't go and, you know, get extra coaching, all of that type of stuff, and pay people way and above more to get better people, so to speak, at your club. That still clearly remains the same. So the advantage, the AFL's always going to be looking and seeing how you, I guess, to some degree with that cap, you're not allowed to go over it. So I understand them not, you know, obviously showing them everything, and, you know, they haven't got, I guess, mum and dad looking over their shoulder all the time. But it's not really that big an advantage in terms of what you're going to put out on the park, though, is it?
No, and I think, and Gleese, I know you want to make a point here, but just quickly, the soft cap in the past was soft. So if you were West Coast and you wanted to bring in an extra high-performance manager, you could, but you paid a tax on that. I think, so that's another advantage of being wealthy. They're looking now at making it a hard cap, making it like the salary cap. You actually can't go over it. And the other thing is, Wayne, no one wants to be in debt. I mean, this debt, and there's a big, I don't know about you, Gleese, but a lot of the debt that Brisbane owe and St Kilda owe is obviously to the AFL and not the bank. Surely they must look now at retiring the AFL debt.
Yeah, they must. But I think that until this happened, clubs were actually happy to carry some debt because money was cheap. The interest rates were so low that they were prepared to say, well, we need this new facility. St Kilda, look, you know, they moved their folly down to Seaford, ridiculous decision, and then to come back again, put it on the taxpayers and the ratepayers and the AFL members to pay for their new facility. But clubs have been prepared to carry debt because it was easy to service. Now that's changed and they've all been caught out. And the AFL's been caught with that too, in permitting the high levels of debt. And that was part of the broader arms race. They had a soft cap, which, as you say, could become a hard cap. But part of that arms race, Jake, was about saying, we need the facilities. We need to build this because they've got it. We have to match what they've got. And that's where I actually defend North Melbourne in this. They built what was a really boutique facility and didn't go and build the Taj Mahal down at Arden Street. They actually built what is a legitimate community facility as well and didn't overextend.
Well, facilities became, you know, a giant pissing contest, really. And it's a lot of money has been wasted, and a lot of clubs that have got money have put too much of overcapitalized, you know, in facilities. One advantage, or not just to reverse Wayne's thinking about the what's the advantage, speaking to the Crows this morning, their argument was there's no disadvantage in borrowing it themselves, because if you don't borrow it from the bank, you're going to be borrowing it from the AFL. So that they didn't see it as all that different. You accept that they control a bit more of their own destiny.
I will argue, though, that the Kangaroos facilities now are the Taj Mahal in comparison to what we had.
Well, compared to what you had.
Wayne, go down to Essendon. It is the most, I mean, I know Essendon hate me saying this. I find that place without soul, without heart. I know they're trying to make it a bit more, I don't know, add some atmosphere. There's nowhere to get a decent coffee except their own cafe. There's no real, and there's a room with these unbelievable custom designed sleek black leather chairs that I think is for the guys who run their esports team. I mean, talk about getting ahead of yourself.
Well, moving on to actual footy and the prospect of footy this year, we had a discussion with Steve Hocking over the weekend where he's sort of as limited in what he couldn't tell us as what he could, and he's, the things that he couldn't tell us are only because they still don't know. They still don't know where the whole situation is, but they're still working around trying to get these 144 games this season. And it's an interesting shift in language because it is 144. It's not saying these next 16 rounds. So it is conceivable that you might have one team play four games before another team even plays a game. Wayne, the first thing that they said was the clubs, the high performance managers, the coaches have all agreed that once they get the green light from government and health officials to recommence the season, they can get going within 3 weeks. Do you reckon that's enough?
I do. I really do. Yeah. Clearly, the players right now in isolation will be doing their own training. And let's be honest, there's not much more to do. I mean, if you've got young kids, you're obviously running around after them, but you've got that much time during the day, you know, to train, to keep yourself in reasonable condition. And I'd argue in way better condition than what you would be in sort of over that Christmas break. And when you're young, like these guys are, and you're in your prime, especially even the guys sort of latter in their latter years, you can go from zero to almost 100% fitness in the matter of 3 weeks. That's how quickly you can pick it up. A lot harder when you get past 40, I can assure you of that. But these guys most certainly could do that in 3 weeks.
They're all in the same boat, Jake, aren't they? I mean, everyone's got the same competitive advantage or competitive disadvantage.
Yeah, that's right. I was just going to ask Wayne how he would go and the North boys he played with quarantine. Because you were a very social team, Wayne.
I'm struggling right now, and I'm 48 years of age. So put me in my mid-20s, it'd be fair to say it'd be a battle.
There's also been the discussion around when and if the competition resumes, that first of all, that it will be based on what we saw in round one. So it will be 16-minute quarters with time on the different breaks. They won't add, won't expand the bench. I think part of the rationale there is you actually increase match payments, and they're struggling for every dollar they can at the moment. But those sorts of provisions around that, the shorter game allows them to back games into one another. No crowds. There will be suburban grounds that they'll look at, but the suburban grounds, part of the problem for some of them is that not that they could, they previously weren't used because they couldn't hold a big enough crowd. Now it's holding a crowd out. They don't want to, they have to have a ground where they can lock people away because they are expecting that when they resume, there won't be fans able to attend. The quarantine idea of relocating teams, how do you think you'd go with that?
Is that, I think you wrote about this in The Age today, Glees. So you might divide teams up into six and six and six, is that right?
Could be. You could. They're exploring all options, and such as they are around the world. But if, for instance, whether it's Darwin or if it's outside Perth, that you have an area that you can actually keep people in relatively safely, what they might do is just relocate, as you say, six teams or eight teams, and you'll play a round robin of games there. You'll play each other as many times as you can in a shorter period as you can. The advantage of that, it minimises all the air transport and travel as far as your exposure to the virus in airports and flights. But yeah, dividing the country up a bit, finding those locations where you can play games in a short period.
I feel a reality TV show coming on.
Yeah.
Well, they're looking at that in swimming, aren't they? Getting them all coming over to Australia and setting up a sort of high-performance elite swimming camp in the lead-up to the Tokyo Olympics, which will obviously be now in 2021, hopefully.
You've got to do what you can to make swimming interesting, so yeah, but footy's in a slightly different situation.
Did anyone ask Steve Hocking about the notion of a sort of mid-season or an extra draft to add to your lists now?
I spoke with him, and he was insistent on everything being basically around getting the season going again. So all the questions around the national draft, around list sizes for next year, around under 18 competitions, state leagues, they're all sort of the next conversation.
I mean, list sizes for this year, weren't they going to make more players available to every club as a way to get all the games away?
At the moment, they haven't put that on the table.
Wayne, has it occurred to you that with your role at Seven as a commentator, you might have to be part of the, Fantasy Island or wherever they send you, wherever they send the clubs, the broadcasters will be somewhere.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I'll give it some thought now. I hadn't given it any thought, to be honest. I didn't realise it had got that far. I understand there's been a lot of things thrown around. We all, as we all know, none of us have got the answers. Our Prime Minister hasn't got the answers. The President of the United States hasn't got the answers. It really is rolling days. I think we're into rolling weeks now. I'm glass half full. I believe the season, we'll get a season out. And whether if it's that 144 games, I really think we'll get there. I'm hoping July. I'm probably more than likely August. And we get to see some footy played. The one thing I will say is the 16-minute quarters, I think, should be here to stay forever. Going into next year, I think that's one positive thing that's come out of all of this in terms of our game, and that is the 16-minute quarter plus time on, I think, has been a big success.
Why?
I just think players are able to stay on the ground longer, so your stars are out there longer, so they're not rotating on and off the ground as many times. And I felt that the coaches thought that you couldn't actually get behind. You actually have to score. You don't have the time to catch up a lead, so to speak. Not as much time, obviously, as before. So I thought it was really good, and I hope it stays.
Wayne, if they do that, do you have to lower the interchange in accordance with that?
I've always been for lowering the interchange anyway. What are we at now? 90? Still at 90?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd be happy for it to go to 50. I've always felt that it was far too high and went far too far. In I think 2010 under David Butterfield, when Collingwood won the flag, you know, they were on and off. You know, Dane Swan was on and off every 3 minutes. You know, we want to see Dane Swan and the good players, the Dusty Martins of the current day and the Nat Fifes and these guys on the ground just about for the whole game.
So, Wayne, that puts you at odds with Patrick Dangerfield, who in an interview over the weekend said he wouldn't like to see them stay 16-minute quarters. How do you think he's been in his role as president of the AFLPA?
Yeah, look, I think harshly criticised to a degree. He has an opinion on that, because I think what you've got to remember as well is Paddy turned 30 yesterday. So Paddy probably wants to come off the ground a little bit more and get a little bit more rest. And the one thing that, and you might say, well, longer quarters, but you will come on and off a lot more in bursts if that was the case. So that might extend his career. But I don't think he'd be thinking about himself. No, look, I think they've done it. I think that the Players Association have been really harshly dealt with. I really do. In the mid-90s, we went and got a union. We put Andrew Demetrio in charge of it. It was 100% buy-in. And the reason why we did that is for situations, and it doesn't matter what sort of situation, and we have the worst of mankind, and they were able to represent the players in a good manner and get the players the best possible deal. I'm all about everyone keeping their jobs, Caro. I don't want anyone to lose their money. I understand it's part of the course, but just because the players are able to negotiate a good deal, we shouldn't be critical of that.
I reckon they've done very well compared to the rest of the footy industry. But and the clubs, I can tell you, they were not happy when they found out on Thursday that they were going to have to pay all their players marketing money, and that wasn't going to come from the AFL. I think they've done, certainly as a union, they've done brilliantly, but I can see why there's a bit of resentment from other areas of the industry.
Well, Wayne, you want to see all of the best players on the field, and the 16-minute quarters to help with that. We'll come back. We'll talk about who those best players are and who they are over the last 20 years.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The kick by Clarkson. Carey, look out! What a mark!
What a mark. What a player. Mark number 8 to Wayne Carey.
Oh, Bernie, that is just superstar stuff. Carey kicks a goal! Thank you, folks! Goal number 5 to Wayne Carey. And if you want to see the way Aussie rules football's played, just have a look at that.
Well, welcome back. Many people consider Wayne Carey the best player, well, at least since Lee Matthews, if not of all time. So we thought it opportune at this time to ask him who were the best players he has seen, as opposed to the last 20 years, which is what I said before. But Wayne, you've got Jason Dunstall at the top of the list, and just running quickly through them, Dunstall, Voss, Hurd, Lockett, Judd, Harvey, Williams, Franklin, Ablett Sr., Buckley, Ricciuto, Goods, Jakovic, McLeod, Martin, Jonathan Brown, Silvani, Richardson, Matthew Richardson, Gary Ablett Jr. and Paul Kelly. What did you do? What did Gary Ablett Sr. do to offend you?
He's never done anything to offend me. He's arguably, maybe not even arguably, to be honest, the most spectacular player that we've ever seen play the game. I think if you wanted to watch the Gaz show, then you'd put up some highlights of him and sit back and have a couple of hours of just pure joy. He was a sensational player. But when I looked at it, the criterias and things that I looked at, just to quickly go through, obviously eras, you know, in the 90s and my list is from about 87 onwards, but right through the 90s, all the gun on ballers, all the superstars, they were tagged week in, week out. They had an opponent that ran with them. Robert Harvey, when we played against St Kilda, we rotated a guy off him every quarter. He was that good. So I put that into it. Match winning ability was huge. Obviously Ablett had that. Toughness, leadership, and being team orientated. So for me, yes, Gary Ablett Sr. was, you know, in many people's eyes, the greatest player ever. But we play a team game, and he's a an unbelievably great individual, but I don't necessarily think he made teammates around him better. So that's why I had Gary Ablett Sr. at number nine and not higher.
And Jake, you've got Koutafidis in, significant in your top 20, and I think you've got Luke Hodge significantly. You rate him a lot higher than Wayne Carey as well, which is interesting.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm going to ask Wayne. I mean, they're all great players. I saw that there were 13 players that were almost indisputable, right?
Yeah.
And that's up to my number 13, which is Dustin Martin. But I think the first 13 that I picked, I don't see. I think, Wayne, you've got all of those players.
Well, Jake, I had 30 down that I could have easily put in this list. In actual fact, I was going to give Chloe a ring and say, Chloe, you've got to let me put 30 in. That's how difficult it was. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, but the first difference I've got, Caro, just Wayne's list, looking at Wayne's list, so he's got Jason Dunstall at one, Voss two, Hurd three, Lockett four, Judd five, Harvey six, Williams, Franklin, Ablett Senior and Buckley. I've got Wayne at number one. So Wayne, I think, can't put himself in the list, but Wayne, I think, I've got you at number one, and I've got Gary Senior, who you've got back at number nine. I've got him at number two. I've got Tony Lockett at three and Lance Franklin at four. There's a lot of agreeance, but there's some differences there. But I suppose, Gleeson and Caro, we should include Wayne, an assessment of Wayne. And my view of it was that Wayne influenced results more than other players. That's basically the essence of it. Not as spectacularly as Franklin or Ablett, but clearly an entire team's game plan was built around him.
In fact, Wayne, we should recognise that today is 30 years to the day, and I was there, that you kicked your first goal at the MCG. It was Friday night, and you were playing the Tigers. Yeah. I think your teammate, John Longmire, kicked 12 that night.
Oh, wow.
But 30 years since your first goal. Do you remember it?
You know, they say you'll always remember your first goal. Well, that's a lie. Well, in my case, so I don't. I do, however, remember that night. I think it was 14, Carol. I think he kicked 14 goals that night, it might have been. It was a lot. I remember him kicking that big bag. I didn't realise that was my first goal, though. No, but and thanks, Jake, for your kind words. It's so subjective. Everyone has an opinion on such a list, and as I said before, all of the players that you've got in your top 20 and those that I haven't were all in my 30. So it's amazing that it's just in different orders that we view them. Like I said, I had my criteria. Leadership played a pretty big role in my...
Then why not Hodge?
Yeah, Hodgie, well, probably the position for Hodge for me. Hodgie's been a great leader. What he did at Brisbane, fantastic. Two-time Norm Smith medal. I think he's only won the one best and fairest. Played on a half-back flank. A lot of the time in the modern game, you haven't got an opponent. You're there directing traffic. So, you know, that weighed a little bit. Hodgie most certainly is an absolute champion of our game, but probably the position he played, I couldn't squeeze him into the 20.
And what about Anthony Koutafidis?
Yeah, Kuta, a bit sort of in the same vein, a little bit as Gary Ablett Sr. I think Kuta's best was as good as anyone's best. I know, you know, once again during the 90s, I remember those prelims, the prelim that he played against the Bombers to get them into a grand final was just, you know, heroic. He was magnificent. But I think Cooter's longevity at the top, probably not like some of these other players. I think Cooter had two brilliant years and some other okay, you know, good years, but didn't string 10 years or sort of 8, 9, 10, 11 years of really consistent high-level football. But his best was as good as anyone, so that's why I couldn't put him in there.
Wayne, can I ask you why you had Dunstall ahead of Tony Lockett? I mean, that's a pretty clear call. I think Tony Lockett was a better player than Jason. I think he was just better. And Jason played in better teams. But I want you to explain that.
I think Plugger was team-orientated, no question about that. He did have that element to his game. But I think, and I always said it, when I sat back and watched both of those guys, even though I played some footy against them and admired them both, I thought Dunster was more team-orientated. I thought he was ahead of his game in terms of putting pressure on as a full forward. He was chasing and tackling and doing those things that probably other full forwards weren't doing. Unbelievably strong mark. And I would argue that if he didn't do his knee and have a fractured skull, that we'd be looking at the all-time leading goal kicker of our game, taking nothing away from Plugger, who I admire immensely, who is that player. But that's what gave Dunstall the nod for me.
And what about Hurd v. Voss? You've got Voss ahead of Hurd. They're right next to each other. Just because they're often compared, and even Nathan Buckley.
I think both tough, both really hard, tough, both really good leaders of their footy club, both match winners, both could turn a game on their head. For me, it was the way Vossi led. It was just that little bit more of a bull, a little bit stronger in the way he went about it. And obviously the three-peat, you know, the premierships. And I think Lee Matthews once said he's the best player that he's coached, and I thought that was good enough for me. So Vossi got the head just over Hurdy, who was just an unbelievable match winner, as we know, and could play in. When I look through my list, there are a lot of players that can play in a lot of different positions, not just on ball. Hurd's a great example of that, being able to play anywhere.
Wayne, I've got two for you, if you don't mind. Yeah. Last week, Jimmy Bartel says he reckons Geelong left one or two on the table. Do you feel that way about your North Melbourne team?
Yes, no question about that. I think, you know, it's funny, and Richmond are going through a similar thing now. They didn't get into a grand final a couple of years ago when I thought they were the best team. They got beat in the prelim. They bounced back and won last year. I think when you're at your absolute peak as a team, you've probably got 3 years. And I think back to the Bombers of 99, 2000, 2001. They only got one premiership out of that time. I thought we were the same. 96, 97, 98, I thought we were the best team in the comp. 97, we had a lot of injuries and suspension. 98, we lost the grand final. And then we pinched one in 99. So I think we definitely at least left one, if not two, but pinched one in 99. So we're definitely one short of what I thought we should have won with that group of players.
And carrying on in the nostalgic vein and slightly less pleasant, how did you enjoy the Ricky Nixon interview that ran over the weekend and his assessment of your contractual deal with North Melbourne?
I saw snippets of it, and I'll say never let the truth get the way of a good story. I'm not sure there's a lot of fact or truth to a lot of it. I saw other snippets of it, and he's up and about, chicken. There's no question about that. There's no question about that. I haven't listened to the whole thing, so I can't really comment. But I look, and to be honest, and I'm being honest with you, a lot of the stuff that he probably did speak to Greg Miller and North Melbourne about at the time in terms of what went on in my contract, I wouldn't know about. So there may be some elements of that are true that I've got no idea. All that I said to Ricky Nixon was, this is the bottom line. This is what I want to know, what I'm getting, how you go about achieving that with the club. of course, under the rules and guidelines of, you know, what you have to operate in, then that's all I was worried about. So how he went about that, I'm probably not 100% sure.
How significant are premierships and premierships won in when you were ranking these players? And did it count against someone like a Lockett when you were comparing him with Dunstall, the fact that he didn't get the flags? The same with Gary Ablett Sr.?
My criteria had nothing to do with premierships.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Didn't even look at premierships at all.
Brownlows?
I did not look at Brownlows at all. And I will say probably because I didn't win one. so I just thought they were a rubbish award. And we don't even take those into account. In actual fact, if you look, I've probably gone against what I said here because Dunstall out of that top group is the only one, and Buddy at eight. So you got two down to seven have all won Brownlows. But I didn't look at that. I did look at how players played in finals. Obviously, if they were a good enough team to get in finals. I obviously looked at how they played in big games. I've got Matty Richardson at number 18. And, you know, I looked at, there's obviously Nick Riewoldt, who, you know, was obviously a five or six time All-Australian, which I looked at a lot. But I honestly thought if Richo kicked 800 goals, if he was in a good team, and don't get me wrong, Richmond a good team in 95 and had good periods during that time. But, you know, if he had better delivery, and I think I could argue a better game plan. For instance, if Richo was at North Melbourne and Dennis Pagan was coaching Richo and you took me out and put him in, Richo would have kicked way more than 800 goals. He was a superstar, Richo. So, you know, probably unlucky to be at 18, to be honest.
See, I'd have never him in the 20, Wayne, and I love Richo as a bloke. He's sensational and he was a great player. But, yeah, so it's just, look, I thought Matthew Pavlich. I think there is a bias in Victoria too against some of the West Australians. Peter Matera, to me, is a player that has been very easily forgotten. He was an incredible finals player and he was an electrifying match winner from the wing. I thought he had to be in there, so I put him in. But
well, and you know what? And those arguments that you make, Richo, arguably the best contested mark in the game during the 90s. And he's playing in an ordinary team. Just to go, Matera, 100%. Both of those, all these players that you're mentioning are obviously on my list and would have been in my 30. I will say about Matera, the reason why I had Jakovic in there, and he's the only West Coast player that I've got in there, is clearly he was the best defender. He beat me on many occasions. And he won four best and fairest during that era that you talk about. He won more than Matera. And during grand final years, they played in finals 10 years in a row. So I had Jakovic being the best West Coast over Matera.
And neither of us went for Ben Cousins. It's sort of
No, well, the thing, and Ben obviously was on my list also. I looked at match winning ability. I think if you go through my list and importance to the team as well, that's another thing that I put down. So, you know, Gary Ablett Jr., yes, has been a match winner, for instance, and he's a superstar, and I've got him. The three modern-day players I've got in there are obviously Buddy Franklin,
Dusty,
and Ablett Jr. So they're the three that I rank as the best modern-day players that I've seen. Ablett Jr., a bit more of an accumulator, and I think Ben Cousins was an accumulator. He would get a lot of the ball, but you know, like a Dusty Martin can grab a game by the scruff of the neck. He can do four or five things and it's game being beaten and then it's game won for the Tigers.
Wayne, what about Nat Fyfe? I put him in. You didn't. Just he's won two Brownlows already.
Yeah, like I said, I don't rate the Brownlows, Jakey. But Nat Fyfe and Danger, I put in Paddy Dangerfield, I put in the same boat. They're in the modern game. They don't get tagged really like they did back in the day. They don't get time spent into them. The opposition coach says, we'll take you head to head and we'll see who wins. They do get a lot. I don't think their ball use is anywhere near the likes of Ablett Jr. and obviously Dusty Martin. They're under pressure a lot when they win the footy because they're contested beasts. So they bomb the ball a lot more. And if, like I said, if I was able to have 30, they would have both got in to that 30, as would have Joel Selwood, by the way, who I'm a massive fan of in the way he leads and also his courage and his form and consistency over a long period of time.
Well, Jake, we have discussed your list, but haven't actually run through it. So I'll quickly mention that. So you've got Wayne at number one. You've got Gary Ablett Sr. at two. Plugger at three. Buddy at four. I can talk about them all as, you know, nicknames. Voss at five. Dunstall at six. Hurd at seven. Gary Jr. at eight. Juddy at nine. Diesel Williams at 10. Bucks at 11. Robert Harvey at 12. Dusty Martin at 13, Nat Fyfe, Peter Matera, Luke Hodge, Jonathan Brown, Kuda, Soss, and Pavlich.
Yep. I think Pavlich is another one of these players that on the Eastern Seaboard just doesn't get the recognition. He played, he's All-Australian, I think, four positions, and he didn't play in a great teams. He until really Ross Lyon got there, he wasn't, they made the finals a few times, but they weren't a contending team. And I think it's interesting that there's not many key defenders. I mean, Matthew Scarlett didn't make Wayne's team or mine, and nor did Alex Rance.
I'd love to show you the list right here in front of me, Jakey, but we're doing a podcast, but I know you can see me.
I can see it. Yeah, look at the ones down. Hold it up again, Wayne, so we can see the ones down the side.
But there is, you know, Scarlett and Selwood and Dangerfield, Treadray. You talk about Pavlich. Warren Treadray won four All-Australians in a row in the years that the Brisbane Lions won their premierships. So he was rated the best centre-half forward in the game ahead of Jonathan Brown, yet we say Jonathan Brown. Treadray doesn't get the kudos that he deserves. And Alex Rance was another one that I had on the list, obviously. Darren Jarman was another one who, you know, highly skilled. And they just, you know, it's why we all sit back, and when we've heard these lists over the years, it's very easy to sit back, but they're very hard to do. And let's not forget, it's just my opinion.
Why didn't you put yourself in it then?
Why?
I mean, clearly, you know, I'm
not sure where I'd put myself, Caro.
I'm asking you now, Wayne.
Just slob just above Buddy there at number seven or something. I was obviously told not to put myself in, and I wouldn't put myself in my own list. I think one of your great ex-players, the great Royce Hart, he may have put himself in his best ever team at centre half forward.
But I
didn't want to do that. And that's the great thing about our game. It is subjective. It is opinion-based. And, Jake, you know, that's Jake's opinion. And thank you, Jake. I now consider you one of the better judges out there.
Can I ask Caro and Gleese, can you have your, just looking at the list, particularly Wayne's, just have a comments on players you think were rated wrongly or correctly or any comments at all on particularly Wayne's list?
The one comment I'll make before I let Gleese have his say is that you talk to Hawthorn people and Hawthorn judges that I rate would have agreed with Wayne's assessment of Jason Dunstall. Many of them even have him ahead of Lee Matthews.
Wow. Well, that's thank you for that because, you know, I think people and look, we will, and it's funny because Gary Ablett Jr. is, you know, Let's hope he goes on next year, given what's going on in the world right now and the year that we're going to have, and we can send him off in the right way. But I think when we sit back, you know, we can forget just how good. But Dunstall was just his hands were just incredible. He was such a sound kick, and I'm very happy with having him at number one.
Yeah, I think that Gary Ablett Senior at nine. There's got to be eight exceptional players to be better than him at nine, and they are all exceptional players, but yeah, for me, that's the one that jumps out. That he's, I'd have had him a lot earlier than that. Quite where, if he's not in the top three, then I'd be struggling with the list. So, but gee, there's no bad players in there, is there?
No, and Paul Kelly was Paul Kelly, and by the way, I sourced some very, very good judges, some ex teammates, both from the Adelaide Crows and from North Melbourne. I got involved. I got friends involved all around the country, obviously on email, and they all sent through their lists, some good, some not so good. And you know, and the amazing thing was just how different all of their views were. And as I said before, I think that's what the great thing. I think if we all agreed or were all pretty much the same, then it'd be pretty boring, I would have thought.
Well, the surprising thing is that the absence of North Melbourne players in it, because normally the prejudice is to put in the players that you played with.
Yeah, and I didn't, and you know, and it was probably more of a deliberate thing. And I think if you looked at, and Corey McKernan's a great example of I think, was it you that said Cooter? Oh, no, Jakey's got Cooter in his list. I think Corey McKernan's best was as good as anyone's best. You know, he dominated the game for a good couple of years, few years, went to Carlton and had a really good second half, won a best and fairest there. But his finals in big games, he was unbelievably good. I rate Wayne Swass and Anthony Stevens, you know, they're the two best players that I played with. I think Corey McKernan probably had the most influence. Glenn Archer was the toughest. But I think if I had put any of those in, I would have had a bit of backlash. So I just felt that if I wasn't going to get myself in there, that I'd leave those guys out as well.
Wayne, did Mark Rusciuto, I know he's a good friend of yours, did he lobby you at all to get him to, you know?
Jake.
No.
Well, he's a great player, but.
I did speak to Roo. I've got to be honest, I did speak to Roo. Roo's an eight-time All-Australian, by the way. And I often say eight-time All-Australian, but I think five of them were on the bench. So I said you probably can't count those five, given that, you know, you're on the bench. You can't really count them, or maybe turn them into a two, so you're really probably only a five-time All-Australian. But, no, he certainly didn't lobby on behalf of himself. I did chat to him a little bit about this group, yes.
Yeah, just another player I think we haven't mentioned, Wayne, that I reckon suffered a bit was Stephen Kernaghan.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned him.
No, well, I'll show you right here, if you can see there. That's his name.
Yep.
Kernaghan.
Yeah, but there's only so many centre half forwards you can put in the 20, Wayne.
Well, that and if you look at centre half forwards, so I put obviously Jonathan Brown in there, but as I said before, and Richo, who I put more as a centre half forward than a full forward. You've got Treadray, as I said, who missed out. And then you've got Kernaghan and and Dermot Brereton as well was another one that I looked at. And Nick Riewoldt was the other one who's a five-time All-Australian. So, and five or six-time best and fairest winner. So all of those guys, obviously unlucky. I went with Brown. The reason why I went with Brown over those guys, I thought if I was to pick if there was a grand final being played tomorrow and they were all to play at their absolute peak, whose peak is the best? Yeah. And I thought Jonathan Brown's peak was the better, which is why I went with him.
That's good logic, and we will leave it on that. Thanks for that, Wayne. That's an excellent list, as is yours, Jake. And the good thing about both of them is that they're both right, because they're both yours. Well, thanks again for joining us. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks, Caro. Thanks, Jake. And thanks to you, Wayne.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
And we will catch you all next week. Thanks also to Channel 7 and Channel 10 for the audio we've used in this episode. If you want to get in touch with us, you can via email at the address realfootypod@theage.com.au or give us a call, we are still answering the phone, on 03-8667-1235. Well, you know, someone's answering. Thanks as always for listening, and we will catch you next time.